The Red Shirt Interviews podcast is a production of the Red Shirt Geeks. Find us at redshirtgeeks.com, where every expendable hero has a home.
Shut up, Wesley.
Red Shirt Geeks!
Hide behind the mound of dead Barnes.
Red Shirt Geeks!
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the next episode, the latest episode of Red Shirt Interviews. That's right, our new spinoff series where we invite special guests to the Red Shirt Geeks podcast. I am Lazdy, the pseudo Kiwi. With me is
the illustrious Patrick M.
And
Dave.
Just Dave.
Welcome, Dave. And joining
guys,
us.
Guys, settle down, Dave. It's still too much energy over there.
I'm a little too rowdy.
We need to subdue that just a little bit, Dave. Please. Thank you. And joining us on this episode is our very special guest, Mr. Aaron Eisenberg. Thank you. Thank you very much for being here tonight.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, gentlemen. Well, you know, having me on the show, I mean,
Specific. Yes, be very specific because our listeners are very discerning. It's a wonderful experience being able to talk to you because, you know, you're going to be at SciCon Tampa this coming weekend, and I know that you're going to really have a great time. We've talked to a number of guests who are going to be there, and we know that they're already ramping up for a fantastic time. I have it on good authority that there will be a full-sized Dalek running around the place.
It'll probably be bigger than me.
Probably. It'll probably be bigger. It'll be bigger than a matchbook. So, I understand that, you're going to be joining, quite a cast of characters, at the show. Why don't you tell us a little bit, about how you kind of got, into this particular event, given the fact that it is actually an inaugural con?
Pretty simple. I was just invited. I'm trying to remember, I think the connection came from a Doctor Who convention possibly that I attended last year in Florida. And then somebody mentioned, oh, we're doing a first sci-fi con in Tampa, if you're interested. I go, of course, if you guys want me, I'll be more than happy to be there. And I think that's how the connection began. And then they invited me, and lo and behold, I'm off to Tampa this weekend. I've had a lot of conventions this year, mostly based with Max, who played my father on the show, Rom.
Right.
Max and I attending conventions and then getting in our makeup and stuff. And that's been kind of fun for all the conventions that we've been going to. But that's not set up this year. So sorry to tantalize anybody that might be listening. Oh, sweet.
Oh, I'm going to see, Noggin Rom. Oh, my goodness.
Nope. We'll have to bring us back another time with both of us.
That would be fantastic. I cannot tell you how much I would love to see that show.
No, yeah, it's been pretty popular. People have really seemed to enjoy us on stage. I don't think we look exactly like our makeup because the prosthetics haven't been able to actually make a mold of our face and our head. Mm. But the people that have put it together have done an incredible job of making look as good as they can. And John Paladin, who's been doing the makeup for us, has been phenomenal and has been great in working with us over the years. And after Tampa, I go off to London for specifically something like that with Max.
That's nice. That's fantastic.
So that should be fun. But this weekend, no makeup. So you'll see my goatee, because then once I'm in makeup, I have to shave it off.
I'm sure you can sympathize, can't you, Dave?
Yeah. I used to have a beard that was down to here. I had to shave it off for work recently.
And don't you look at yourself in the mirror and go, oh, my God, I can't go outside. I look so weird.
Basically, I have a 2-year-old daughter. I had to worry about, how I presented to her.
Yeah.
It's
weird. When you're used to having that and then it's gone, you're like, oh, mm-hmm. my God, I look so strange right now.
Definitely. Now, so when you guys get all done up in your makeup and you're on stage together, do you guys get into the father-son bickering?
Well, in a matter of speaking, perhaps. I mean, we have a little script that we roughly follow that Max writes. And then we kind of adjust the script for the location that we're going to. Okay. And then I usually end up butchering it somehow or another. and it's really just about, we go up on stage and have a really good time and kind of be, we're really silly. I do the Ferengi love dance that is a curse on Max does a rap, which is amazing because he writes all these parody songs, and he's such a great guy. He's such a great performer. You know, if you ever have a chance to see Max or Armin, and there's so many, Jeff, I mean, these guys are great people up on stage. You know, they give great performances, and as much as they were a pleasure to work with, it's always wonderful to see them at conventions and then to be with Max or Armin or Jeff or Casey at the conventions. It's always nice to see those guys. So we do that, and then we do a photo ops, which seems to be pretty popular so far. I think if we had a mold of our head, we would even look closer to the actual characters, but we're pretty darn close. You know, thank God we've got, you know, John Paladin is putting on the makeup and doing a fantastic job every time we do it.
I don't think that the makeup was a big component of it, but I really think that what sold the character is you know, playing the character. Same thing with Max, the same thing with Armin. I mean, I had the
personality.
Yeah, it's definitely the personality. I had the pleasure of meeting Armin at a Star Trek convention in Cincinnati, 1993. It was Armin, Nana, and I believe Marina Sirtis was there as well. Mm-hmm. And I remember him telling a story about, it was right when the earthquake hit. I believe that it was the 89 earthquake, and having to leave set, and he's racing down the 405, and
story.
Yeah, and he's in his Quark makeup driving down the road, and people are just kind of, not only has it just been a massive earthquake, but now there is a Ferengi driving down the motorway.
Yeah, you know, they're probably more used to it than any other city, you know. Oh, there's another actor driving a car, you know.
Yeah.
But that is a great story that he has to tell. That is a fantastic, and that is true. That is true.
I don't think
I was working that day when that earthquake hit. As a matter of fact, I remember being woken up by the earthquake.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, as I was saying, the character itself is somebody that you exude. So you know, when we look at you, even looking at you without makeup, I can see Nog. I can see that you know, the mannerisms, you know, and you can see, you know, we talked about the, you know, the differences between the characters and such like that, and uh-huh. You know, we're sort of saying, well, you know, Quark was always the conniver, and Nog was almost, I mean, in a way you could tell that he looked up to Quark, but at the same time you knew there was something behind Rom's eyes that nobody else could see. I mean, he was a lot braver than he let on. I mean, he put on the persona of somebody who was, you know, so afraid of his big brother, but right. But at the same time, you know, he did, you know, he portrayed the character in such a way that there was something there and you never knew when it was going to come out. And again, you know, you played alongside him, and there's this great dichotomy between father and son, but also two really good actors.
Yeah. And my relationship with Quark was obviously different than Rom's relationship with Quark. You know, I have to give a lot of credit to the writers, to be honest with you. You know, I get a lot of compliments. I've been very fortunate over the years to be complimented on the work that I did on the show. But the truth is that the writers, they gave us really great stuff to work with. You know, they didn't just give us, you know, cheesy lines and, you know, a little scene here and a little scene here. They really fleshed out our characters. They gave us great stories. I know I can speak for myself. As Nog and Max, you know, his journey was just as amazing as my journey in a completely different way, and it's almost like we almost had more than some of the regulars had. It almost felt like, you know, and I think the writers believed that they needed to really flesh out a world within the station, because Deep Space Nine was different than the other shows prior to it, Next Gen or Star Trek, because it wasn't going from point A to point B, where it was finding stories.
Right.
So the life needed to be within the station, and the stories needed to come to the station. And the only way you could do that is by populating it with all these different characters that, you know, that basically become the spider web that goes further and further out. And, you know, that was the benefit to us as recurring guest stars. We weren't just somebody that showed up for a few scenes in one episode and were never seen again.
Right.
Kind of like the episode that I did in Voyager where I played the Kazon. You know, it was a fun character. I loved it, but it was gone like that. I never got to revisit him. And the joy of Deep Space Nine was the fact that I got to revisit Nog and literally play the same character for 7 years. And I was blessed. I was truly blessed to have what I had. Really blessed.
I know that from my perspective, you know, one of the great things that we were able to do is, I mean, DS9 is you know, as I was explaining to Dave before we started, that it's in my top three of favorite series. And the reason why it's in that top three is because it is very much the it felt more real than anything else. I mean, you got to see all of the flaws. You know, you had Avery Brooks, you know, you had Renee, you had, Nana, you had, I'm grabbing names out of the air, but there's so many great, actors, you know, and
well, Mark Alimo's story with Casey Biggs, you know, DeMar, those are great. That's a great storyline, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Great characters.
And you got this, that was the wonderful part. You got to see these. They weren't just the spit-polished Captain Picard, you know, James Kirk, you know, these distinguished officers or characters who were so perfect that you had to find the most outrageous ways to bring them down a notch. You could quite easily topple them with something simple as a romantic relationship. And again, you know, you either had that or, you know, we talked about, you know, Nog's story arc later during the Dominion War, where he is injured at AR-558 and loses his leg, you know, and it wasn't just
they give you another one, you know, it's not that big of a deal. just throw another one on there.
Yeah, it's come on, it's no problem.
Well, it seemed a little bit of a deal to Nog, though.
I just pretended.
Look, my leg is gone, and look, it's back.
Bam!
Look at that. The miracle of modern science.
I'll limp it for a couple episodes, but there you go.
Yeah, but, you know, again, I mean, it's wonderful to – I mean, we were talking about with earlier interviews that we did, that one thing that sets actors who were in Star Trek series apart from people you don't see that much anymore is the fact that they – you tend to see them a lot at cons because – they are good with the fans. They get brought back a lot because, again, you know, the conventions aren't so much about the actors or the guests or the features. It's about entertaining the fans who are coming from far and wide to, you know, to meet yourself, you know, to meet other people who are in whatever the shows, the movies. So the fact that, and this is something I believe in dearly, is that if you are approachable and you're willing to, you know, be open and share your stories, a lot of times that reaches the people so much more than, you know, hi, you know, what's your name, you know, and sign an autograph and and off you go. You know, it's like yourself, you know, being very gracious to come on our show. You know, we're a small podcast and we're working to build ourselves up, and the fact that you were so willing to come and talk to us, you know, again, that is a hallmark of not just a good character actor, but a good, you know, a good actor and somebody that we want to follow.
Well, right on, man. Thank you. Yeah.
Patrick, I understand you have a question for Aaron.
Yeah, going back to Nog's injury and losing his leg, it's something that applies today because we've been in a semi-war footing for the last 13 years, and there's lots of soldiers coming back with the post-traumatic stress syndrome and injuries. Is there anything particular you did to prepare for that part of the role to convey the mixed emotions and the feelings Nog had in the situation?
You know, it's funny, as the years go on, I get this question asked of me often now, and I get the highest compliments I get are from veterans that have come back that said that show helped them get through what they had to deal with, and so forth. And they asked me, you know, how did you nail that, as some have said. Maybe others feel I didn't, but the compliments I've got is that you nailed it on the head, and how is that possible? You know, you're in your early 20s. It's not like you were a veteran, and you went to war and came back, and, you know, how did you do that? And it's funny when I think back to that episode, the way I approached it wasn't necessarily that Nog had PTSD, or not what I thought what PTSD was. I didn't feel like he was having these nightmares or that he was constantly, you know, reliving the losing of his leg and what have you, or constantly, you know, being traumatized by the war that he was a part of. The way I approached it was that prior to him losing his leg, Nog was a very gung-ho soldier. He would do anything to succeed, and not sacrifice his integrity. I meant as in he was the good soldier who didn't always have the right answers and make the right decisions, but he was always the one who would get back up and try again, and he was determined to succeed. He was determined to be the best Ferengi he could be. Kind of like the same passion that a Ferengi would put in to earning money or profit, Nog took that same characteristic and applied it to succeeding in Starfleet, despite all the odds against him. So my mindset was he had this idealism of, you know, I do what I have to, Sisko's my man, he's, you know, he's my boss, da da da, go, 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 go. Do everything right in school, I'm intelligent. I, you know, yes, chief, yes, that. He's this good soldier outside of Valiant, where he makes, you know, some poor decisions. And then, bam, he loses his leg. And for the first time, I felt that he was faced with mortality. I felt like he realized, he goes, oh my God, I could die. I could lose my leg. If I could lose my leg, what else can I lose? Mm-hmm. What have I actually decided to embark on? And am I willing to risk that for what I want? And I felt like I approached it more like kind of like the light bulb going off for people when they're a little bit too, you know, oh, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. And I'm going to go, 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 go. And all of a sudden reality sits in and they go, oh, shit. I never thought that this could happen. And then they have to step back and ask themselves, do I really want to do this? So for 7 years or six, you know, not six, maybe what season did I go to Starfleet? 4 or 5, something like that. Right. So for the past three years or so, Nog just bam, bam, bam. And all of a sudden, oh shit, is this what I really want? And I think when we deal with trauma and when we deal with those crossroads in our lives, we have a tendency to withdraw. We have a tendency to go within ourselves and ignore everyone around us, to hide, so to speak. And that's what I felt Nog was doing. He was hiding from the decisions that he had to make in his life. He was hiding from his fears. His fears of the unknown in the future. And it was written in the script that way. The things I say to Vic, you know, well, I don't know about this. And, you know, what if I die? And da 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 da. And Vic says, look, buddy, you gotta use the cards you're dealt with. But at least you're playing the game. We in here, you're just dead. And that, to me, was what it was all about for him, was just retreating from reality. And almost like drug abuse in a sense, you know, using something else to numb yourself so you don't have to commit to a decision, to what you really want to do, as well as the trauma of what happened, like, oh shit, I can die, you know. And maybe I was able to take, you know, I had a kidney transplant when I was 17, you know, so I have a different outlook on life because of that, as well as pursuing my own dreams of acting. But always wondering, could I lose my kidney next year? You know, I'm working on Star Trek Deep Space Nine. I'm like, oh my God, I don't want to lose my kidney and not be able to play this role anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, so maybe those same kinds of fears I was able to then put in to Nog's mindset for that episode. So that's kind of how I perceived it. That's kind of how I approached it. That Nog kind of had a switch, you know, and he was just like, I don't know if I can cuss on the show, but he was like, screw all of you. I don't want to deal with anybody. Everybody leave me alone. Everybody just leave me alone. And he wanted to hide. And I feel like the holosuite, Vic was an analogy for drug abuse in a way, you know, numbing the pain.
There's a, there's this, I guess, again, you hit the nail on the head. There's a very real sense of, you know, one of the things that we, at least as far as my perspective goes, one of the things we've never really seen from Star Trek is a gritty reality where the real consequences of your actions come in, not just in a failed mission. They come in the form of a damaged psyche, doubts about your choices, things of that nature. We equate to the whole situation to PTSD. The one thing that really hit home for a lot of us, at least from what I could tell, was that you basically, when you had this big war going on, it wasn't just the bad guys were the Romulans or the Klingons. It was these people who had absolutely, they didn't care. They didn't care who they were steamrolling over. They were picking their allies amongst those who could be the most conniving and spineless as possible, as in the Cardassians. And they just thought, we're going to steamroll right through all these guys, and we don't care what damage we do, you saw the, there was no question about what the Jem'Hadar were like. So when you talk about that Nog was the good little soldier, not only was he obviously trying to impress, but at the same time, he had the distinction of being that first Ferengi to wear that uniform, and being able to say, okay, I have a point to prove. And then, of course, as you get further along and things get worse and worse and worse, you start introducing those questions. So for people who have never dealt with that before, we got to see firsthand what it was like for a character to be broken down to the point where they don't even know who they are anymore.
Yeah. And again, the hats off go to the writers, Rod Moore, Ira, Hans, Robert, all those guys, they wrote a great show. They cared about what they were writing. They cared about the show they were creating. And we couldn't have been more fortunate.
I tend to say this to our guests who, for me, are the most approachable and, again, are the most open about stories. We spoke to Jack Stauffer, and, some of us remember him from the original Battlestar Galactica, and that's about as far as it goes. We remember this character Bojay as a, this sort of very boxed in sort of character from 40 years ago, nearly. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, that's whatever. But it was fantastic to sit and listen to him talk about his career, mm-hmm. about how interacting with fans at the conventions are. You have been absolutely totally accommodating. I love it. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Sure.
We hope, again, I hope we can see you again. I hope we can talk to Max as well at some point.
I'm sure he would love to do it.
Yeah. And of course, I'm not sure. Are you going to be at Geekonomicon in December?
No, I'm not scheduled to. No, okay. They haven't asked me to come. Okay. I can tell you one more story if you want before we go.
Please indulge.
This is a good story. This is a good one. Since I mentioned earlier the Ferengi love dance, this was one of the scariest moments. I tell this story a lot because people seem to really enjoy it. So you remember the episode You're Cordially Invited, right?
Yep.
You guys remember that episode? Okay. So in the scene with Dax's party, you see Nog doing that dance where he's like, ah, and he's doing this. And first he's dancing with Kira. And then at the end, Terry pulls him into the pit in the middle, and then she starts dancing with him. And then they cut to Armin and Sirach just kind of going, oh, my God, just kind of face-palming themselves. You with me on all that?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay, well, the most ironic thing was that wasn't even part of the script. And as a matter of fact, on the show, improv almost never happened because the writers, you know, always wanted us to stick to the script. If you wanted to change one word, you had to have the script supervisor, whose name was Judy, who was phenomenal, call the writers and say, can we change this word from this word to this word? And most of the times they would say no. So you literally had to stick to the script that you had.
Okay.
So this morning, the morning of the shoot, I'm looking at the script, you know, the night before. I'm like, oh my God, I don't have any lines in this scene tomorrow. It's just a party scene. Sweet. I don't have anything to do. This is awesome. This is the easiest day of the 7 years. I'm just show up, getting makeup, and then they'll send me a check. And so I'm sitting there, you know, hanging out because I'm usually first in my makeup before anybody arrives. And David Livingston, who is one of the producers and the director of this episode, comes up to me. He's like, hey, good morning, Aaron. How are you? I'm like, hey, what's up, Dave? Shaking his hand. I'm all excited. You know, I'm working, you know, following my dream, playing an actor. Not playing an actor, playing a character, but being an actor on a show. And
I think you were right the first time. Come on now.
And so he goes, hey, Aaron, at the beginning of the scene, I want you dancing. Okay, great, awesome, thanks, man, and walked away. And I sat there, and I was like, oh, shit, I don't know how to dance. I mean, I don't know how Nod dances. He's a Ferengi. What does that mean? I don't know what to do. And I had my heart fell so deep, I think it was in my toes. I was so terrified because I had no clue how a Ferengi dances. There's no manual. They don't give you a book and say, oh, turn to page 150. Ferengi dances. Pick one. No, Armin wasn't there. I couldn't say, Armin, has this been established yet? How a Ferengi dances? Do we dance? Do we have, you know, what do we do? You know, do you just go out there and just kind of, yeah, hey, you know, in this orange makeup with these big ears, and you're like, what are you doing? Am I Elaine from Seinfeld where I, you know, just have no rhythm whatsoever? And I was just sitting there going, oh my God, I have no effing clue what I'm going to do. Thank God we shot another scene of that party first, and I'm standing there next to Nana, and I'm still perseverating over this dilemma. What do I do? What do I do? And I look to Nana, I go, I'm really pissed off right now. I don't know what I'm going to do. I got to come up with a dance. How do I dance? This is bullshit. Like, what am I going to do? Go, ha, ha, ha. And I start growling at her. And she starts laughing. And I go, you know, you make a woman laugh. You go, really? That was funny? And it's like, oh, that's so funny. I go, yeah? Well, you, and then my rebellious side comes out. Oh, yeah, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to turn around at the camera and shake my ass. That's what I'm going to do. And she goes, oh, man, that's awesome. And I go, really? Really? Okay, I think, oh, I got my dance. So, of course, he makes it worse. And he goes, okay, Aaron, you're up. So we're going to put you right here. Camera's behind me. And I'm like, okay, are there, like, other people? Am I, like, in a part? No, no, you're all by yourself. You're just right there. Let's see what you got. Come on, you kidding me? What do I got? Like, what if I didn't have it? What if I came up with, he's like, do you have plan B? Do you have something else? No, I don't. I have no idea how dances. So I'm sitting there, and luckily I'm in makeup, so you really can't see too much of what's going on. And I'm just sitting there, and everyone's behind me. Everybody, background, actors, crew, director, they're all behind me. And I remember this like it was yesterday. And I'm sitting there, and I'm just going, oh, here we go. I'm either going to fail miserably, or I'm going to be the funniest thing since Richard Pryor. Well, and so all of a sudden you hear action. And here I go. And I'm spinning. I'm shaking my ass. Going back and forth. I'm growling. And it's like 3 minutes. And I'm like running out of breath. I'm dying here. I'm like in my head going, cut already. Cut. Of course, I couldn't see what was going on behind me. Apparently, everybody was laughing so hard they couldn't yell cut. So I'm just going, cut. Everybody starts laughing. Everybody starts cracking up. And I remember this going, oh my God, thank God. Thank God that worked. Because if he came up with me saying, do you have something else? I'd be like, dude, I have nothing.
I got nothing.
Please tell me the outtake of that exists somewhere.
I'll be in my trailer. I'm done.
No, but that story, I think, is on one of the DVDs when they interviewed me for the DVDs. And it's a true story. And then Terry thought it was so funny. She went to David, David, we got to do that at the end. Like in the big party, I'll pull Noggin. And Dave's like, oh, that's a great idea. So you see her pull me in. And then that cut to Armin and Ciroc was never in the script. The only person that wasn't very happy about that dance was Renee. Because when I'm dancing with Nana back and forth, he enters and then they go off and have a little conversation. But at the beginning, when we first shot it, I was still in the foreground going, dancing like this. So obviously I was upstaging their scene horribly.
Well.
And Renee was like, Dave, come on. And they had a conversation and says, Aaron, okay, once they start talking, kind of hop off camera. So okay. If you watch it, you'll see my head go like this off camera.
I got to go back and watch this now. Because I remember that, you know, I did, when you mentioned the episode, I was like, yeah, okay, this is the, you know, this is the episode where we see Worf and Jadzia get married. And it was just like, I'm thinking, oh my God, I totally remember this. I got to go back and watch this now. I got to go back. I'm like, all right, Netflix.
And now, wherever I go, oh, will you do the Fergie love dance? I'm like,
You do understand.
Well, I had to title it that. I had to give it a title of something, you know?
Yeah.
So when Max and I do our show together, then I always do the Ferengi dance, and I bring some people up and teach them the dance, and people seem to have a really good time. So it's fun. I mean, I say it's a curse, but it's a great story. It's a great story. Terrifying day of the 7 years. Terrifying day.
But it's one of those things that probably defines that entire time for you. You always remember it. You'll never forget
that day
you invented a whole new dance craze for Star Trek fans.
Yeah, unbelievable. Unbelievable. I'll never forget it, and people will never let me forget it.
Look, I mean,
the whole idea.
Yeah,
hopefully if people are listening to this, will come on out, and I've got a few more other stories that, you know, are great. We had a great time on the show, man. I couldn't have been more blessed and more fortunate to have what I had. And sometimes I think if I work again on another show, I don't know if I'll ever be as lucky as fortunate as I was of who I got to work with on that show. From the writers to the actors to the producers to the crew, everything was just perfect. Just perfect. It was just one of the best times of my life, no doubt.
We cannot wait to hear the feedback from the convention. Just so our listeners know, you know, Aaron will be at SciCon Tampa this weekend. That's September 26th through the 28th. Have a fantastic time, Aaron. Thank you so much
for being on Red Shirt Interviews. Thank you for having me.
And we cannot wait to hear more stories from you. We will definitely be catching up with you again very soon.
Awesome, guys. Thank you. Thank you for having me, and good luck to you and your endeavors. I hope the show works out for you.
Red Shirt Geeks!
And that's all the time we have for this episode of Red Shirt Interviews. I'm Laz D, the pseudo Kiwi.
I'm the illustrious Patrick M.
And I'm Dave.
Lacking a name otherwise.
Be sure to check us out on our website at redshirtgeeks.com.
And check us out on Facebook, on Twitter.
And make sure you guys subscribe to our channel on YouTube, where you can check out a couple of our great shows.
Because we are the Red Shirt Geeks, where every expendable hero has a home.
Shirt Geeks podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Sharealike 4.0 International License. Permissions beyond the scope of this license may be available at redshirtgeeks.com.